to close us against those that would cause us harm, but open to the greatest risk takers, entrepreneurs, and talent that the world has had over. Don't be humbled by this. Develop your own narrative so that you can be part of it.
Welcome to the Private Chef Podcast, serving the 1%. I'm your host, Hannes Henschen. And on our show, we speak to the best chefs, how they honed in on their skills to excel in the industry, and what it takes to work as a private chef for some of the most exclusive clients in the world. Welcome to another episode of the Private Chef Podcast. I'm your host, Hannes Henschen. Today, our discussion will explore the complexities of immigration law, particularly as it pertains to private chefs seeking guidance for their employment in the United States. I'm excited to introduce our guest, attorney Michael Wiles. Michael is the managing partner at Wiles & Weinberg, a prominent immigration law firm in the country. He also serves as an adjunct professor at the Benjamin and Cardozo School of Law in New York and has a background as a former federal prosecutor with the United States Attorney's Office in Brooklyn. Among his notable clients are First Lady Melania Trump, renowned artists like Sarah Brightman and Lionel Richie, culinary master chef Sean George, among others. Welcome to the show, Michael.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me, Hannes.
Yeah, of course. Somebody with your background who has helped so many people, including chefs like Sean George, to come to the country. Who else for immigration advice than you? So what is the biggest hurdle for professionals seeking to come to the United States? Like, where is the major bottleneck for them to come here?
Well, first, a pleasure to be with you again and your audience. For those watching this, the chefs and the professionals in the culinary space are perhaps some of the funnest and most enjoyable clients that we have. The biggest hurdle for those individuals is to know whether or not they have enough achievements or not, whether or not they've accomplished adequately to impress the immigration authorities. And people spin themselves around sometimes wondering if that were the case. It's so important to develop a relationship with a very strong immigration lawyer in the very beginning of your career so that you hit certain markers to make sure that you can get the coveted visa and that you have a plan. Is the plan include getting a temporary visa or going for a green card and eventually U.S. citizenship? And those are the sorts of challenges that I see people are bereft with when they start.
So for somebody who has worked for prominent restaurants, for example, Michelin star restaurant overseas, at what point should they engage with an immigration lawyer in the United States to see whether their accolades are already sufficient to make their way into the United States?
So a person who's already worked in a Michelin starred restaurant is already there in many ways. But the question is, just how extraordinary are they? Are they working as a sous chef? Are they supporting somebody else? Or is it a narrative that would support a longer haul? One of the more important decisions that a person has to take is whether or not they just want to get a entree into the United States and get a more sophisticated visa later, or apply for permanent residence with a visa that would permit it. And what I mean by that is there are many visas out and about that people can apply for that will not allow you to have a dual intent, that will only allow you to work, and then afterwards you need to leave the United States and go back home. The visas that would permit you to have a dual intent and therefore be here temporarily and at the same time manifest an intention to be here permanently are the golden visas, as they are, as they lead to a path of permanent residence. And that is the way I was trained by my father. My father started our law firm in 1960. He passed away about a few months ago. And the training was exceptional, as it revealed that individuals that came to the United States often don't want to just come temporarily. And although they may feel that now, our job as immigration lawyers is to design a path that would allow them to apply for the next stage, permanent residence, if they so choose.
So which ones should somebody avoid to later be able to actually pursue a longer stay, like, for example, a green card?
So student visas are tempting because you might want to come to the United States and learn a skill or go to a school. You can get either an M or a F visa. Those are one, the M visas of vocational schools. There are culinary schools, or the F is a fully matriculated university and so forth. But you have to understand that the work authorization that you get associated with the student visa is short shrift, and it won't really permit you to stay for extended periods of time. Also, you've now presented yourself as a student, even though you may have had some professional experience and expertise on your resume before you came to the United States. You've now placed yourself in the mode of a student, where the government may not think, if you came forward with a more sophisticated visa, that you were eligible for the visa. We generally try to marginalize the education if somebody does have a huge profile and simply came to America to learn a particular skill. I'd like to learn about baking. I'd like to learn about certain contours and science of foods and such. Like that, so that we can go back to the person's narrative and so forth. But the visas that are temporary and short shrift is the F visa, the M visa, the J visa, which is also kind of a trainee, a stage, an apprenticeship. All of those visas do not speak to a dual intent, nor do they really impress the immigration authorities as somebody with a tremendous portfolio.
Yeah. And then which are the pathways that actually allow you to later convert for a longer stay period?
So there are four bedrock visas, the H, the E, the L, and the O. I usually liken it to the acronym HELLO, the H-1B, the E-1 or E-2, the L or the O visa. And those are the standard bearers. The H and the L in the statute itself permit a dual intent. The problem and the limitations of all the visas are monumental when it comes to individuals trying to apply for them. So the H-1B visa is for a person who has a pulse and a degree in a field. So if you went to university and you studied hospitality or culinary arts or certain areas, you would have to prove to the government that it was a specialty occupation, that it's not something that you can just do on your own. If you're the head of a pantry or you're working in a professional crew, the H-1B is a wonderful visa. But it has to be professional work. It cannot be something with your hands, as it were. And it has a very delicate, it's a delicate visa. Why? Because there's only 65,000 of the H-1Bs issued a year. And hundreds of thousands of people generally apply for it. The H-1B also is a wonderful visa, not just because it allows you to apply for up to 6 years, but it has a special provision that allows you to recapture all the days, weeks, and months that you were not in America, as you're entitled to under the statute for 6 years of an H-1. So you often can extend your H-1 beyond 6 years simply by your travels and recapturing every day, week, and month that you were out of America. There's also a beautiful portability clause that allows you to pivot from one employer to the next. Once you're successful in getting the first H-1, you don't have to wait for the approval of the next one to go on the payroll of the employer. By filing the application with immigration, you can simply go on the payroll while the application is still pending. The H-1 allows for a green card. So on a Monday, if you get an H-1, on a Tuesday, you can apply for a green card. And if you marry a citizen, it allows for unfettered travel in between while the case is pending. So it is a go-to pivot visa. The E-visas are for either E-1 trade or E-2 if you start your own business. And we have the requisite treaties with your home country. This is where if you're married to somebody and your spouse has a treaty, but you don't, you might be able to avail yourself. Unlike the H-1, where the spouse isn't permitted to work, with the E-visa, the spouse is generically permitted to work in America. And the E-2 generally is the go-to visa for people who start their own restaurants. And here, when I teach it in the law school, I tap my nose because I want my students to understand that the government is going to want to smell the pasta, as it would. If this is a restaurant, where's the red and white tablecloth Where's the water cooler? Where's the cash register? If you sell bagels, how many did you sell? How many employees do you have? What's your monthly rent? They want to see all the parts of the company that you put together. Or if there's an e-visa established in a countryman that mirrors your nationality, they want to make sure that you're doing something essential for that company. The next visa is the L visa, which are the intra-company transfers. If you're fortunate to work for a conglomerate, a restaurant, or a business that has an affiliate or a subsidiary in the United States, and you worked on the payroll a year abroad, either as an executive, a person who's a manager, or somebody with some special knowledge, you can transfer over on the L visa. Often, my students will, or my clients will actually leave the United States, work abroad for a year, and come back because it affords them a quicker path towards green cards and ultimately a more comfortable visa because they're not deemed to be threats to the American job force. Finally, the O visa, those are for people who are extraordinary in their space, outstanding in the arts, business, entertainment, athletics, and so forth. The business of the food industry is very significant. And like you did mention in your introduction, we've represented some of the finest restaurants, chefs, sous chefs, and supporting cast members in the world. I remember at my bar mitzvah when I was 13 years old, Michael Chow from that beautiful Chinese food chain restaurant being a guest sitting at our table. My father had already in the 1960s and 70s worked with the best chefs throughout the world. So there's the potpourri of visas. And by the way, with the O visa, you have to be important in your space. You have to show 3 out of 6 standards. And then you have to have commitments. You can do a direct sponsor with the employer, or you can do an indirect one with an agent and be kind of a freelance. But those are the main ingredients, if you would, for the visas, the H, the E, the L, and the O. Again, the H has to do with your degree, the E with treaties of trade or commerce, the L, intra-company transfer, and the O with the kind of talent that you portend. And when clients come to us, we try to see if they fit in that kind of vein. And interestingly, we tell people, be humble. Maybe you'll work in support of another chef. If you've worked with them in Europe, even on one occasion, you can get an O2 supporting an O1. You can develop your narrative under the wings of another more important talent, and then eventually change from the O2 supporting that talent to your own O1, depending on how it's crafted.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like, for example, the L visa, would that apply, let's say I'm within the Marriott group, which is one of the biggest hotel groups in the world. I work up my ranks within the group. I'm eventually a sous chef or executive chef, and they have an opening in, maybe they're opening a new hotel in Las Vegas, for example, and that they could transfer me internally also based on the procedures that I've gotten to know over the last couple of years and are especially applicable if they transfer me to their new hotel in Las Vegas.
Yeah, so that, you know, there are limitations or restrictions that you need to be careful on. And that is sometimes the L visa won't work unless they're professionals or certain degrees in the group that you're managing. They don't mm-hmm. want, it won't work unless it's a major group like the Marriott group or other hotels with major chains. And then the question is what you're doing less than professional and something with your hands that sounds more like an yeah. O visa? There are all yeah. sorts of limitations that can make it happen. But yes, if you develop a huge stride that a company, a hotel, or a group would like to transfer you to the United States, you always have those options. I much prefer to do an O visa and transfer somebody else because the recognition by the government that the person, the talent, has already got certain achievements and acclaim means that I'm part of the way there for a green card if the person wants to show that they're extraordinary. And the paths for green cards is something I can discuss if you like, but the O visa is already an acknowledgement by the federal authorities that you are substantial.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's maybe first talk about how we can establish ourselves as substantial and knowledgeable within our particular craft of arts, which is the culinary field. So if, let's say, I'm still overseas, but I'm eyeing to come to the United States and I want to establish myself as that substantial individual for the US government, what kind of accolades do I start needing? For example, maybe I had some local press in Munich before I came. So there's like a track record of public recognition of what I was doing in the culinary field. What else counts to that substantial standard?
Right. So obviously a person who wants to meet the measures of an O visa has to identify those standards to themselves. Many of them can be easily achieved by the right employer that you have. I'll never forget, we had Woody Allen once, a very famous film director, call up about a photographer, and she was just okay. But when he said, I want her to be the set photographer in my next few films, she went from just an okay photographer to a rock star photographer for an O visa. So what you want to do is, first of all, high remuneration is very easy to meet. If a normal chef makes X and you're making Y, then you can automatically show that you're more distinguished than other people. That's easy to achieve. If you've put personal product or done anything original out there, if you've spoken at conferences, if you played a critical role in a project, these are ways to distinguish yourself. If you've won awards, if you've participated in panels, if you've judged other people's work, all of these portend individuals with talent, and you want to place yourself in a position where that happens. If you're part of associations or groups that you normally can't get in unless you're asked to get in, the selectivity of it is enough to show a certain level of achievement as well. We usually know it when we see it, and it's very different in the world of, you'll forgive me, of baking as it would be in the culinary arts, as it is for our sommeliers and all the other talents that are out there. There are standards that people have to meet. And in certain countries, there's authentication or credentials that are often given. And we like to see that as well.
Mm-hmm. So, for example, working particularly as a private chef for ultra high net worth families, if a family already has an existing relationship with you, for example, I know one particular chef who used to work with a family in Switzerland. The family moved the primary residence to the United States. So I think they were also able to support him on an O visa, if I remember correctly. And that was simply based on the affiliation with that particular family.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, the distinction of a family that has the ability to choose and afford whatever they want, wanting you, plus the credentials of your own journey, is very impressive to immigration. Now imagine, these are non-lawyers that all day long understand people who are talented and who aren't. And when you have individuals that have their own private planes and yachts and multiple homes, they have culinary preferences, whether it's kosher cooking or certain needs because of medical or allergies. All of this is nuanced into the experience. Now, we can't do visas based on the personal pride that somebody has, the friendship that they have, or the trust that they have in their taste and watching over their children. But generally, mm-hmm. they understand the objective credentials and achievements that individuals have, and the ability for discerning people of wealth to choose what they believe to be quality.
It's like you're reading my mind. I was just about to go there. Like, where's the limit to that? Because then if a certain billionaire, he can just be like, yeah, I want this nanny and I want this person and this person. But from my own experience, I know it's also not quite that easy. They don't always get what they want.
Yeah, Hannes, it's not that easy. And also the individuals have taken their own journey and their own lives. By the time a millionaire or a billionaire loves them, not likes them, they've already achieved certain impressive credentials in their path. Mm-hmm. And I have to say something. There are a lot of people who may be watching this who may want to develop a coaching strategy with us. They may be embarking on their career and they would like advice as they make choices and have us hold on to the portfolio of their achievements and then make the old visa or whatever visa or path to a green card and let them know when it's ripe, when it's ready. Like something that has to cook and simmer properly, having the right ingredients, the right relationship is critical.
Yeah. But it really sounds like the O visa is something that somebody who has like a plan into the future can work on. Like everything you've mentioned, from being in critical roles in projects to awards panels, being a judge in certain ways, or I think all of those you can plan into your career path. That's like something that you can gather probably within the time span of like 1, 2, 3 years and then come over to you and be like, hey, those are the accolades I've been working on. Are we having a direct path to an O visa here now?
Yeah, excellent summary. And you can have fun too. I want people to understand you can pace yourself. You don't have to be in such a rush. If you're younger and you want to travel with the family or with the employer that you have, it'll open doors. You'll meet more important people and other critics of the culinary arts that can add to your portfolio. Some of the applications that we put together are really works of art. I would share my computer and show you our office and some of the O visas that are in the queue because they're beautifully stacked with lots of color photos and reviews from magazines and newspapers. We want to make sure that the letters that we draft for our clients to put forward with their O visas are also works of art, that knowing that these are not lawyers that we're dealing with and see the world's top chefs and individuals in this space, we have to impress them. So when individuals come to us in the very beginning of their careers and they're developing their path, we try to tell them to have fun, to go enjoy it, and to find ways to distinguish themselves. And sometimes putting in time in an obscure country or in an obscure place where the restaurant is developing its stride, and then all of a sudden your hard work brings it over the top, we can show how pivotal you were to the reputation. You know, the Michelin star is accorded to the restaurant, not to you personally. Are you going to get individuals there to then say that we would not have been able to achieve this had you not been part of it? And what role did you play in that? As well. And I also want to add, Hannes, that there's all sorts of creative directors and other people who are the accoutrements, if you would, to this experience that we get visas and green cards for also. Everything from lighting directors to sous chefs to the supporting cast members in this arena. It's so important, and also in all others. So if we have hairstylists that have designed individuals' hairs from queens to rock stars on the cover of Vogue magazines, then the colorists and the other people that support that industry also deserve certain achievements and acclaim. Also, the same in the culinary arts, that there are a lot of supporting cast members and talent that can bring you to the front as well.
This is actually a really interesting distinction because, as you said, it's not just about the leading head chef in the team. It's also, hey, we had this saucier sous chef over here who was really essential in us accomplishing that because, you know, his ability to make sauces and his creative input was crucial to the success of the overall restaurant.
And more importantly, if you strut your stuff and somebody really likes you, then I can play with all four of those visas in other ways too. If you're married and your spouse has a path and then your spouse gives you a visa, like I said, the E allows for dual intent, partially dual intent, but it allows the spouse to actually work. The L allows the spouse to work, where the H and the O doesn't. So, you know, when I do sessions or in the other lawyers in my practice do intakes, we're always looking to see how far the person went to school, what country they're from, did they work abroad, is there an affiliate or subsidiary in the U.S., and just how much talent they have.
Yeah. So talking about spouses, and earlier you mentioned that if somebody were to marry a U.S. citizen, you know, they would have a more direct path. is marriage in itself a legal pathway to immigration, or does it need to be love-based?
So excellent that you asked that question, and it shows your content of your character, because there are people, and there is a European style where people will get married as an accommodation. It wasn't a fraud, but you really have to embark on wanting the rest of your lives together. It cannot be an accommodation, a friendship, because the authorities will know it and they'll track it and they'll data mine and they'll see that you're actually growing in different countries and in different ways, and then you won't get it. They also have built-in systems on this. They will not allow people to get a green card that's permanent in nature. If the marriage is less than 2 years by the time it's adjudicated, you're only going to get a temporary green card good for 2 years. You then have to file an application 90 days before it expires to remove the conditions to the green card. It is a very smart path to rely on the marriage. You want to rely on your own relationship and on your own options and not on an employer. But it's also dangerous to accelerate to a marriage if the relationship is not ready for it. Yeah. And you want to make sure that it's not form over substance. We have a very strong record of success with the immigration authorities. I'm not allowed to tell clients that we've never lost one of these, but we haven't. And because there could always be a loss. I can tell you that a lot of the marriages don't last. I'm also a mayor, a Bürgermeister, as they say in German, in
yes,
in New Jersey, where I live, and I marry a lot of people. So when the couples come forward and on their arm is the label on the jacket, it means that they're taking a picture with the mayor and they're going to return the jacket. They're just doing a phony marriage for convenience. But you want to make the right decisions. There's nothing wrong with accelerating a relationship if it's real. You're living with each other. There are two toothbrushes in the bathroom already, and you have plans to spend the rest of your life. And you can get yourself to be a citizen. Forget not just a green card through a marriage case. So generally, there are four projects that immigration lawyers are ensconced with when a person has a marriage availability to them, a legitimate one. They get them the temporary green card. Then you remove the conditions, get the full green card. A year later, 3 years rather than 5 years after the green card, you could apply for citizenship and then a passport. If, God forbid, they divorce, you can still get the full green card. You just have to wait 5 years from the green card issuance to get citizenship rather than three. So we do that analysis at the same time. And while people are working on their temporary, their H, the E, the L, or the O, and they find Mr. or Mrs. Wright, and they decide to marry, we pivot all the time into that.
Mm-hmm. And that could be a legitimate thing that happens. Like, you move to another country, you start meeting people, you know, start engaging with people. You might actually find somebody where there is substance and not just form.
And we caution people. We caution people not to do it unless they're really ready. And then there could be family wealth that would require to get a prenuptial agreement, where you need other intervening individuals or professionals. I don't mind prenuptial agreements. It shows the immigration authorities that you went into this with eyes wide open. And it's often that a talented lawyer in our space will work with both the business and the personal path. And of course, if the person ever had an arrest or crosses paths with the criminal line, our litigation group takes a front and center role. But we can generally absorb all of this.
Does that generally give you a disadvantage if you have any previous records, criminal records? Like, I remember when I immigrated, I had to show my criminal records, which were clean, but I'm just wondering if there are some minors on those. Does that help?
Yeah, there's always a problem if you're not open and notorious about it. If the crime is one that shocks the conscience or is a crime of moral turpitude, you can be challenged, or an aggravated felony. We generally know how the crime will be meted out or looked upon. You just want to be very honest with your lawyer from day one. And if you didn't put it in your visa papers, and then you're going to come clean during your green card all of that is relevant. Also, any adverse immigration history that you might have becomes relevant. Also, you have to make sure if you have a past where you were stopped or dunned in some fashion, you want to be transparent about that to your lawyer as well.
Yeah. For example, many of the people, is there a distinction between Europeans and, for example, Southeast Asians? Like, there's many people reaching out to me, particularly, for example, Bangladesh and India, and they're obviously, for economic reasons, trying to make a better future for their family, trying to come to the United States. Are they hampered in any way based on the passport that they have?
Excellent question. You know, the United States has good relationships and poor relationships with many different countries, and they take it out on their nationals. Unfortunately, there's a lot of discrimination that occurs. And I say that embarrassed, truthfully, as an American, because we have reciprocity with certain countries. You might see it as a positive experience if your politics is on the right, that we're not going to treat Brazilians properly if Brazilians don't treat Americans properly. But for individuals in the creative space, particularly the culinary arts, they are unfortunately sacrificed along the way. And you need to understand that even if you achieve with Homeland Security, who gets the visa applications domestically, an approval for an O, that does not necessarily mean that the State Department will issue a visa to you. And it won't be the same visa. Years ago, for example, we represented Pelé. You know, Pelé is this iconic
player. Of course.
He's the master chef of soccer, as it were. We got him a 3-year O visa approval, but because of you'll forgive me, the shit relations between the United States and Brazil, he could only get short shrift visas in his passport. And it was a headache for him to have to go around all of that. It's so important for individuals to kind of know and learn how the politics of where they live and their experience in life is going to portend on a visa. So it's a very good question. Individuals from Europe are going to have less of a bumpy ride coming to the United States than individuals from Sri Lanka or South America. And you have the politics of the region, and particularly in an election year, as we get closer to November, all of that's going to ramp itself up at America's embassies. So yes, it is a part of the formula. It could get bumpy, but we know how to handle it as well.
Yeah. So what are the relationships India and US? That's one of the biggest immigration countries. There's
Which
a lot
country?
Of applications.
Command?
India.
Yeah, India is strained. The perception is that everybody from India wants to live in America. The quotas have retrogressed on the family and on the employment side of the ledger, and it proves to immigration that that's kind of the case. So how do you get somebody to the head of the line? What if they are very talented, they get no visa approved, and they show up at the embassy? We've seen America's embassies turn around and say no. And by the way, sometimes it could be crazy. It could be friendly countries. Japan, for example, we had a violinist once from Lincoln Center where the person said, sorry, I know you got an O visa approved by Homeland Security, but you're not your mama. I'm denying the O visa. At the American embassy, they denied it. So you have to be able to surmount the narrative and to be able to be prepared by lawyers. It's not good enough just to get the visa approved domestically. You have to surmount the consular part of it. And that's where politics plays a significant role.
So if somebody had a previous declined visa, for example, let's say you try to immigrate to Canada before, is that something that would show up in the process? Is that something that the U.S. has access to?
You want to be open and notorious about it. I applied for a visa. It was denied for this reason. I'm applying now, and I believe I'm meritorious. And we prepare people to explain it. Maybe in your past, you were denied a visitor's visa or a student visa, and now it's an American company that's petitioning for you, and they say that you have extraordinary ability. And that's what we'd like to do, by the way. People with adverse issues, we'd like to get the visa approved domestically at the Homeland Security so that when you face the State Department to get your visa, they have greater assurance that there is a need for you in America that an American company has already successfully petitioned for, and that somebody in the home office in Homeland Security has decided that you have the credentials and the talent. And now you need to have the confidence, and we do sessions with our clients to prepare them for the visa so that they can deal with the awkward parts of it and try to explain whether it's criminality or past denials as well.
Yeah. It's still kind of mind-boggling that somebody on the world stage like Pelé would go through trouble coming to this country.
I traveled with him privately multiple occasions throughout Europe, and they would have in the private planes, everybody would have their paraphernalia set up on a table. When he would land, he would go right over to it with a Sharpie and sign all the different paraphernalia, sneakers and soccer balls and books for everybody. There was a reverence. He was the Babe Ruth of soccer to Americans. You know, he was everything.
Yeah.
And when I went with Jean-Georges, you know, the chef, to get his citizenship in America, and this is a fun story, and it was a beautiful experience for him. When you are being tested for American history, you have to study 100 questions. They can ask you 10. When you get 6 right, then you've passed the test. When he got the 6th question right, he jumped up like a little boy. He was so happy that the talent and the flair that he had in achieving the creative expertise that he had was truly in his personality. You can see that he lived and loved and did everything with the right enthusiasm. And that's my message as we wind down this podcast, all that wonderful talent that's out there. Be yourself. Develop your own narrative. Talented lawyers in America, particularly our office, would be honored to help you find that voice and develop a stride in America in a way that would allow you to live your dreams in this beautiful country. The American dream is still open. I wrote a book a few years ago, Safe Haven in America, Battles to Open the Golden Door. I've always believed that America's door is on a hinge to close us against those that would cause us harm, but open to the greatest risk takers, entrepreneurs, and talent that the world has had over. Don't be humbled by this. Develop your own narrative so that you can be part of it.
I love this. Michael, thank you so much for your time. Where can people connect with you and the firm?
Our pleasure. I'm happy to come back another time and talk about the paths for a green card. Again, we could be found online at wildslaw.com. My last name, WILDESLAW.com. Lots of our chefs have given us permission to talk about the experience. You can go through the reviews. Our privilege to have spent this time with you.
The information provided in this podcast is for educational purposes only and is not intended to constitute legal advice. While we strive to provide accurate and up-to-date information, immigration laws and policies may change frequently and vary depending on individual circumstances. This podcast does not create an attorney-client relationship between the host, guests, and listeners. Therefore, any reliance you place on the information provided in this podcast is at your own risk. We strongly recommend consulting with a qualified immigration attorney or accredited representative for personalized advice regarding your specific immigration situation. The views and opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the hosts and guests and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of any organization. By listening to this podcast, you acknowledge and agree to the terms of this disclaimer. Thank you for joining us at the Private Chef Podcast. If you know any highly skilled chefs that want to take their life to the next level, make sure to share this podcast with them. And if you enjoyed this episode, click subscribe and check out our upcoming episodes. Thank you for listening.